There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
This week on Lunchbox MB, the average bee will make a 12th of a teaspoon over its entire life.
3,000-year-old jars of it have been found in Egyptian tombs, still fresh to eat.
And it's been used to sterilize wounds, varnish wood, and embalm bodies.
It's honey! And welcome to Lunchbox MB. I'm Manu and I'm here with my fellow QI elf, Jack. How are you doing, Jack?
Doing great, thank you. We're also joined by recipe developer and food stylist, the lovely Jodie Nixon.
Hello.
Woo! Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Thanks
absolutely
for joining.
Buzzing for the... Oh my God, ooh, I didn't even mean to do that.
Well, she's a wit. Are we all melivores?
That's a good word.
Is that melivorous? Honey lovers?
Yeah, well, they're honey eaters, as in carnivore. Herbivore, melivore.
Oh, because meli is Greek for honey. Yeah,
exactly, yes. Mm-hmm. So you work, of course, for Mob.
Yes, I do, yeah.
Mob Kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
Where does honey sit in your sort of kitchen of dreams?
It's always in with tea and the coffee.
Oh,
because it
really?
Needs to be, yeah, it needs to be on hand when I need it. I always find there's always something that needs a little bit of honey. It's kind of like one of the daily essentials. So I've got a thing for Greek honey when I'm in Greece.
Really?
Like, I just love it.
Why is it particularly different?
I think because of, obviously, to do with the kind of plants that the bees are visiting. So it's all kind of like very herby, very floral, but you don't really get it in the UK. So when I go, I just eat loads of it. My stepmom's Greek, actually, for context. So yeah, we've been going there since I was a kid. I've been completely spoiled.
That's so nice.
Yamas.
I want
it. Yamas, yes.
I want a Greek stepmom.
It's fun. It's so really nice. Fun.
So bees, they make honey, surprise, surprise, not for us and our supermarkets. They actually use it as a foodstuff for raising young and to get through the long winters where there are no flowers, no nectar.
Looking into this, I wasn't entirely sure what nectar was. Like,
oh, really?
It's one of those kind of basic knowledge. So
yeah,
nectar is
right.
The sugar-rich liquid that's produced in a plant's nectaries.
Nectaries. That's a good one.
I love it. And then bees also collect pollen.
Mm-hmm.
Which in raw honey, sometimes you'll find pollen in that. And pollen is basically flower sperm produced by the male parts. And the bees eat this as well because it's full of protein and fats and vitamins and minerals. So that's where they're getting all of their other nutrients. It's not just like sugar.
So that's something I didn't realize is there are two products. I didn't really know which one the bees made honey out of. So they make honey out of the nectar,
mm-hmm.
and the pollen finds its way in,
mm-hmm.
but they're looking for the pollen in order to eat it.
So bee pollen they'll collect on their legs,
sure.
little like pollen saddlebags. And you can tell which flowers bees have been visiting by the types of pollen that stuck to their legs.
Wow.
So you can see them come back to the hive.
Of course.
Like, oh, you've been to lavender.
That's really nice.
Very wholesome.
So historically, we mentioned in the intro, it was found in ancient Egyptian tombs. I think it's pretty much common to every culture in the world. And before we had processed sugar cane in this country, we would often sweeten things with honey, which was collected from the wild. And when was apiculture, when are the first evidence of beekeeping?
So there's been loads of really important developments in beekeeping, but modern beekeeping isn't actually that old when you think of the kind of hives that are separated by slats.
Right.
That was like a kind of 19th century invention, because before that, it was basically just like
forage,
but I mean, you could have hives in certain spaces, but once you collected the honey, you destroyed the hive.
Oh no.
You killed all of the larvae. Oh. You tended to kill the queen. Oh. So it's very much like not a very healthy relationship. But the earliest evidence we have of actual humans eating honey. So there were really, really old drawings of honey collecting from like 40,000 years ago.
Wow.
Caves covered in pictures of humans collecting honey. But the earliest evidence we found thus far was from pots collected from Nigeria that belonged to the Nok people. So researchers at the University of Bristol recovered remnants of beeswax that was 3,500 years old.
That's crazy.
So they would have been foraging honey, like hunting honey, probably rather than having hives. But what's really cool is they suggested some potential uses, which are used by hunter-gatherers and were historically used throughout the world for all different reasons. So one is for preserving food. So the Okiek hunter-gatherers in Kenya today, they still hunt game, and they can preserve the meats that they hunt for up to 3 years.
Wow.
That's very cool. Honey glazed hunting.
Yeah, because it's so dry, which we'll talk about, it's really good at preserving meat.
So it's really, really old. I guess as hunter-gatherers, I don't know who discovered it first, but you might well have witnessed sort of a large mammal in the bush sort of climbing a tree in order to, you know, brave the stings and get some delicious honey. Mm-hmm. Or you might come across a hive that had fallen off a tree and then, you know, taste it with a finger or something. But like, it must have been mind-blowing to have so little sweetness other than fruit, I suppose, because it's a very different flavour. If you kind of zoom back and think about it, I think honey is quite a unique substance because it's like made in nature and has slightly naturally occurring sugars, but not as naturally occurring as, let's say, an apple, which you can pluck from a tree, tastes sweet. The honey is manufactured, but not by humans. Mm-hmm. We take it for granted because you just find it in the shops next to the jam and the Marmite in the supermarket aisle. But if you're a hunter-gatherer, it's like the stuff of heaven because you've never come across processed food. All food is either nuts, berries or tubers or meat. And this is kind of incredible variety of flavours, which we'll also come on to, and potentially quite powerful medicinal properties. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like ahead of its time in terms of its processability. We're so exposed to processed foods these days, but honey was the original, the OG.
Oh, imagine being that first person to be like, let me taste a little bit of that, and guys, then taking it home to your mates and just being, look what I found.
Try this.
That would have been insane.
I know what you mean.
Okay, so honey is obviously created by bees, and there is the argument, like, is honey vegan, is it not? I actually know some vegans who do still eat honey.
It is interesting because it's not directly secreted by the bees, it's not part of their flesh,
but they've done the labor.
Also, that's exactly it.
It is processed by their bodies, like part of the end product is impacted by the enzymes in their digestive system, and the way that the sugars are broken apart and preserved is very much like that's them. They don't just take the nectar and it's magically dried out. Like, their bodies are so much a part of the process of this food.
But interestingly, honey is kosher, and the argument is it's not secreted by the animal, it's just gathered and then produced in its mouths and it's in its hive, and then you take it away. So bees aren't kosher themselves, but honey is.
But it's also like, I think, what is vegan? And it's such a complicated...
it depends on your own definitions of veganism.
They are making this substance to support themselves through winter months.
Yeah, you're stealing food from the bees.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really mean.
I know, but it's so tasty.
Time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
It is time for our first lunchbox, and today that is mine, and I have brought in some honeycomb.
Oh, look at that.
I know.
It looks like a little kind of like house or something, do you know what I mean? Like it's got the pillars.
Yeah.
I mean, it literally is kind of part of someone's house. Yeah. So this is how bees make honey and how bees make their comb. We have, I think, a quite romantic idea of dripping honey and that colour and all of these things. But, like, there's a lot of shit going on inside a beehive. Like, have you seen bee larvae?
They look like grubs, don't they?
It's so gross. And that's what the comb is for. I mean, apart from storing honey, it's to raise young. So they'll have their little laying eggs inside all of these combs, and then they start as little worms, and then they start becoming bees. And it's like, it's not. So that is mixed in with all of your delicious honey.
Right.
So.
It's got two layers to it, and you can see the pillars running through. Is that where the larvae sit?
Yeah, they develop in those holes.
Wow.
Because they're like perfectly bee-shaped.
Yeah, and they go quite deep as well. I wasn't expecting that.
Well, first of all, Jodie, thank you for styling this so beautifully. It's like
it's easy when the food itself actually just looks so gorgeous. You just plonk it on a plate and it's stunning. But I'll take the credit.
Don't tell everyone.
So today I'm literally going to talk about some birds and some bees. First we're going to start with some birds.
Okay.
Honey hunters. These are birds that live in sub-Saharan Africa. They are brood parasites, just like cuckoos. So they don't build their own nests. So they'll lay their eggs in the nests of other birds. Their chicks are similarly evil, will like beat the shit out of rival chicks. It's not, they're not a very...
You've got a warped sense of morality. That's just nature.
I'm like, that's not very nice. But one of the cool things is that they love taking humans to find honey.
Okay.
Like, they've co-evolved with us. So what they'll do is they'll approach a human and make a special call that they wouldn't normally make. Okay. And then they can lead someone for kilometers to a hive. And the human breaks open the hive. So the birds get the wax and the larvae.
Okay.
The human gets the honey. Win-win.
Amazing.
Apart from the bees, who are completely destroyed by this process. The birds can digest the wax. We're still not 100% sure how, but they can. And there's stories of back in the day when European missionaries went to Mozambique. Honey hunters, honey guides would fly into their houses and start eating all the candles.
I know.
And they'd be like, what is going on? And then they'd chew them out. And then in chewing them out, they get led to honey.
Amazing.
Because they discovered it in their own way.
That's crazy.
I know. And what's really cool is in 2013, a group of researchers from the University of Cape Town did a study on honey hunters, and they found that they have regional communication styles that are specific to the people that they're working with.
Wow.
So they followed the Hadza people in Tanzania and the Yao people in Mozambique, who both practice honey collection with these birds.
Yeah.
And they recorded the calls that these humans were making to these birds to call them and like take them to the honey.
Oh, right.
And then they went to the opposite place and played the wrong recording. And the birds were like,
they didn't come.
No, they didn't come. So they've learned, like they've learned specific calls. And this is definitely evolved because, like I mentioned, these birds don't raise their own young.
Yeah.
So this is like deep, deep knowledge that's in their bodies of this language with humans.
I see. So it's instinctive. It's not taught.
Yeah. It's so cool.
I didn't realize it was a two-way communication. If you're a Hadza and you're quite hungry and you're just like, I want some honey. You just do the special honey call and the bird will come.
Yeah.
Wow.
Exactly.
It's like Deliveroo.
Yeah.
So you have to go and get it, I suppose. Yeah.
But I thought we could try some of the actual wax.
Oh, yeah.
Because I have not tried
it. It's not toxic, though.
No, okay, it's non-toxic, but I don't think it, like, if you ate loads, I don't think it would be very good for you.
Okay. It looks like plastic, doesn't it?
It is. It's kind of like, even when you're like forking it feels a bit wrong.
Oh.
So we're literally sticking our forks into a chunk of hexagonal comb and it's dripping with honey. But then once you've sucked all the honey off, you're left with a sort of light wax, isn't it?
Yeah.
They're quite strange after a while.
It's a bit like chewing gum.
At the start, it's really nice. And now I'm like,
it doesn't taste of anything.
That is quite an insane, like, mouthfeel.
I'm taking my nap.
I can't dip. It's so tasty, though.
Mm.
I like that. That's like a very, it's nature's chewing gum.
So honey making is insane. Like, bees are mad. The way they make this is mad. A little bit about bees. Bee 101. There are over 20,000 species of bee, but only 4% of them make honey. So that's about 800 species. Which
they're
is...
the 4% that like have all the PR, basically, aren't they?
Exactly.
You teach a toddler about bees, you'll be like, they make honey.
So we, when we're thinking about bees, we're thinking about honeybees, Apis mellifera. Not all bees have hives. Not all bees have queens. Some of them are just solitary and they live in wood. this is true. Honeybees do die when they sting you. Mm-hmm. That's a true thing. Their internal organs get stuck to their stinger, which is an ovipositor. So basically it's only the females that will sting you because it's the same thing they use to lay eggs.
Got it. Wow.
But bumblebees have a smooth stinger, so theirs come straight out and they're fine. So a queen lays about 2,000 eggs a day, and all of the bees that do the work are women. Like, male bees have such a weird deal in this process.
Talk to me.
They live about 50 days.
Okay.
And their only job is to have sex.
Okay, sounds
good. They can't collect nectar because their mouths don't work properly. They don't have the right proboscis, which is that like sucky thing.
Straw.
They don't feed themselves. They stick their tongues out and wait for other females to take pity on them and spit honey into their mouths. So they're like, if there's enough honey, we'll get some, maybe. They can't collect pollen because they don't have the right saddle bags on their legs. They don't have the right hairs.
Okay.
So what they do is they just wait outside the hive. And then maybe if they're lucky, another female will be like, you know what? I'm going to do it. I'm going to become a queen. And she flies out on this nuptial flight. He's like, okay, this is my chance. And then a group of males swarm this female try and stab her with their penis. And then if they're lucky, it gets stuck in her.
Okay.
And then, like the stinger, it rips his internal organs out and he dies.
Oh, I was just going to say, this sounds like quite a good gig because you don't have to do any work and you get free food and you have sex all the time, but then you die quite gorily.
You die, it's really horrible. So that's the male bee. And then the females are the ones who are doing all of the amazing honey production. So female honeybees have two stomachs.
What?
They have their honey stomach.
Okay, yeah.
And then their personal stomach.
Well, it's like having, I always say, you've got your normal stomach and the dessert stomach. It's the same thing. There's always room.
Which is true. Like, that is a proven thing.
It's not true that we have two stomachs.
We have two appetites, at least.
Two appetites, and it's like having separate bank accounts, one for all your, like, dodgy deals.
Oh, wow.
So many of those, yes.
One for buying laundry.
So there's two stomachs. When they go out on a flight, they'll collect nectar, and if they get hungry, they have a little valve where they can open a connection between their stomachs and they actually, I need a bit of that. But otherwise, they fill up their honey stomach and they return to the hive. And if it's full, it weighs almost as much as she does. So it's
The stomach or the hive?
The honey in her stomach. So it can collect up to 40 milligrams and she weighs only 50. So she's carrying loads of weight. So when she returns to the hive, she spits it into the mouth of a house bee.
Okay.
Who then spits it into the mouth of another bee, and they spit into each other's mouths like this so many times that the water content of the nectar reduces from about 80% to 20%.
Okay.
Well, because the bees are absorbing.
Yeah, in the spitting line, they're processing it so much that the water's like constantly drawn out. And then when it's spat into the comb, finally, they'll flap their wings in the hive around and it's basically turning the hive into a dehumidifier.
Oh, cool.
So one of the most important things about honey and one of the reasons it lasts so long, apart from it's very sweet, which is good for preservation, is that it's so dry.
Interesting.
So at the end, it will be about 18% moisture.
Wow.
Which is why it lasts for thousands and thousands of years and why it has all of these antimicrobial and antiseptic properties, because bacteria hates dry environments.
Yeah.
Well, you say dry because to look at it, you wouldn't think so. But there's just so little water content.
That's exactly right. So yeah, it's when it's fully ripened, then they put a wax cap on the top of it to store it for winter. And it's only specific kind of females that can make the wax. So it's young females. They ooze liquid from their abdomens.
Okay.
And when it hits the air, it solidifies. And then they chew that up and mix it with their spit. And that's what wax is.
Wow. It's
actually quite mind-blowing hearing all of this.
Insane.
It's such an alien process, isn't it?
I know.
So you can see why, as hunter-gatherers, we're like, how has this stuff arrived in our,
it's mad.
Busy, busy bees?
Well, one of the really cool things is we're still on the shape of honeycombs, which are the famous hexagons that all kind of stack next to each other. This is the ideal shape for storing a really big amount of liquid and not using a lot of wax, because producing wax takes so much energy and so much food. So you want to be able to make shapes that are very efficient. We're still not entirely sure how they're made. For years, people thought these were just really good at maths. Now
they're not calculating the internal angles.
Well, that is genuinely what people thought. They had the capacity, which we don't know. Maybe they do.
Yeah,
but what's more likely is that when they deposit the wax, they do it in a circular tube, because that's how their bodies fit.
Yeah.
Which is why, like, their nests aren't triangular or square shapes that also tessellate but aren't in the comb. And then what happens is, as they're moving around the hive, the wax melts a little bit, and when it resets, for some reason to do with physics that I don't know what it is.
Circles are quite hard to maintain. So if you just, like, if you're in a circle that's quite malleable, then when you nudge it and people are nudging it from the other side, it will naturally form a hexagon.
So another thing, which is just it's the best, bees communicate by a dance. When they found nectar, this is according to Kew Gardens, they'll come back to the hive and they'll do this round dance signaling, I've found some honey.
That's so
and
cool.
And then they'll do the waggle dance, which carries an insane amount of information. Where the nectar is, how far away it is, and in what direction their friends
need to fly. The dance.
It's a great dance.
Yeah, interpretive dance.
It is.
That's crazy.
In addition to that, I read that about 20% of bees ignore the waggle dance, which is actually a really clever way of then, because if everyone follows the same path, you end up like getting all the nectar from the same bush and then running out. Whereas actually you have these like maverick bees who who may well fail to find new nectar, but they also may well find even better nectar. So you need that kind of balance of like the people rebels. Who toe the line and then the rebels.
Oh, cool. Yeah,
which,
I like that.
Which bee do you think you guys would be?
Oh, I toe the line, definitely. No, I'm following, same.
I'm following, if they tell me there's the nectar, I'm off. Yeah. I'll be going to that one.
It is time for our second lunchbox, and today that is you, Jodie.
Indeed, and I have brought with me some fried chicken with a hot honey drizzle all over the top, because hot honey is very of the moment.
Right now,
there's over 100 million views of the hot honey hashtag on TikTok.
No way.
Because there's just been this like huge obsession with it.
So when we refer to hot honey, is that temperature or capsaicin content, like chilies, basically?
I would say it's to do with the chili content and how spicy it is.
What is in hot honey?
So it depends where you're buying it from or how you're making it and what your preferences are. So this one is just honey, a little bit of vinegar just to cut through the sweetness. And then obviously there's like a hot sauce or a chili or something that you can bring the spice level in with. But you can put so many things into a honey to make it hot. Like you could do some really smoky dried chilies. You could just keep it simple and just put chili flakes. Like it literally, the opportunities with honey are quite endless to make them taste spicy and nice. Okay, get stuck in. See, chicken and hot honey makes sense.
He cuts through and a little bit of decadence.
Exactly. But I think actually honey in general for savory food is always going to elevate. Every time I do a cheese board, there is always honey on that cheese board.
That is great.
To make the chicken, all you need to do really is you want to put it into a buttermilk brine situation, and the buttermilk helps tenderize meat. Mm-hmm. And then after that, you'll make a seasoned dredge out of flour and maybe 11 or so spices, a pinch of MSG if you fancy it, and then you just fry it like normal.
Nice. Like just, yeah. Oh, it's really good.
It's very simple.
So how else would you incorporate honey? Where else are you sneaking honey in?
So the really interesting thing about honey in food is that it's a humectant. big word.
Great word.
Obviously, we've talked about how honey is dry. Mm-hmm. But actually what it does when it's in food, it can draw moisture from the air and it allows the food to stay moist and fresher. For longer. So that's what keeps pancakes moist and cakes moist. You know, like a lemon polenta cake is probably going to be very sticky and dense and wet. It's just absorbing.
Or baklava.
Baklava.
So good.
Yes.
It's also quite a good name for a posh baby boy, isn't it? Humectant. Come and have your kefir.
Oh, wow.
So it's really great for like marinating. Obviously the only difference then is that you have to be slightly more careful when you're cooking the meat, because it burns quicker than sugar. So yeah, I mean, it's really great for adding loads of flavor into glazes or marinades and stuff, but you do have to be slightly more
Sorry, I didn't realize it burned faster than sugar.
No, I didn't either. So I read that bees convert sucrose from the nectar into fructose and glucose, which are different types of sugar. I think they're just smaller molecules, right? But what does that mean for taste?
So honey is actually sweeter than sugar because it contains more fructose, which makes it about 25% sweeter. So if you're gonna sub honey in for something else, then you have to reduce the amount of liquid in the recipe, but you also have to account for the fact that honey is 25% sweeter, so you can just sort of knock that bit off. You know?
Honey maths.
Yeah.
Honey maths.
Get those bees involved. They know how to measure hexagons.
They're such good mathematicians.
They don't know math. So is it also then a healthier option? You don't have to use as much of it.
Well, actually, that's interesting. It depends what you deem as healthy, because actually per tablespoon, there's more calories in honey than there is in sugar. However, from another kind of like health perspective, it's low GI, which means it's got a low glycemic index. And this basically means that it raises your blood sugar a lot slower than sugar does. So I guess it's how do you define what health is? I mean, obviously, it's full of antioxidants and anti-inflammatories and things like that. So there's, I mean, for me, I would say honey is healthier than refined sugars, but some people might disagree.
A pretty good measure of expense, like a pot of organic, like farmer's market honey is going to be a lot more expensive than like caster sugar, which is often an indicator of how complex it is and how unprocessed it can be.
Yeah.
Do we want to talk a little bit about medicinal honey?
Oh, yeah.
Because that's another massive thing. Like we've been eating it for generations. We've also been smothering ourselves in it for generations.
Speak yourself. What you do in your personal time is...
It's a fun weekend. Like we said, very, very low water content, so antimicrobial. But we've been using it to like cure wounds and heal burns and all of this stuff because it acts as a really good natural barrier to disease and infection. One of my favorite things is that there is kind of a little bit of bleach in honey, which is why... So it's hydrogen peroxide is one of the chemicals that's in the end product after the bees have done like all of their business making it. But it's in very, very low percentages.
I was going to say,
my immediate thought was like, obviously you can dye your hair with honey because that's like hydrogen peroxide is in the hair. But it's apparently the concentrations are so small.
I really
you need a lot of honey.
Have you done the maths?
Someone else did. Thank you. Because it's very complicated.
The bees did it.
You need a lot. But really cool. In Australia, there's another kind of medicinal honey that's used. But it's not made by bees. It's made by ants. Have you guys seen footage of David Attenborough eating an ant?
No.
It's
disgusting, but it's very funny. He's eating the honeypot ant, and a specific kind of honeypot ant that basically acts like a comb for the colony. So other ants will go out, collect nectar, bring it back and then spit it into the mouths of this ant. And this ant doesn't move very much. It's called a replete. That's the type of ant it is. Uh-huh. And it just grows and grows and grows and grows.
Oh, my God.
And fills with this ant honey. Ooh. And then that's what David Attenborough
was like. Oh, so he ate the big, fat, juicy one.
Yeah, he did.
So,
and it dribbles down his mouth.
Oh, disgusting. So anthropomorphize, that's like feeding the same person all of your honey until they get like enormous, like as big as a room, mm-hmm. and then just coming home and being like, oh, I'm a bit peckish, I'm just gonna lick Dave and like get some of his sweat.
Exactly.
Oh,
right.
Wow.
Like their storage unit is Dave. Which is great. So in 2023, scientists did an analysis of the medicinal properties of this ant, because Indigenous Australians have been using ant honey in medicines for a really long time, and they found that even though it isn't as kind of potent as, say, Manuka honey, which is like super, super strong in terms of its antifungal and antimicrobial properties, it does help cure some diseases. So there's a microbe called Staphylococcus aureus, which can cause skin and soft tissue infections, which left untreated can lead to pneumonia and all of these horrendous joint and like bone diseases. And that ant honey helps fix it, which is very cool.
And also really... I read that not all bees make honey from nectar. So have you heard about vulture bees?
No.
They make honey from carrion, dead meat. They go away and bring back dead meat and make a sort of honey that they then feed their young in the same way the honeybees do.
Ew.
And what does that honey taste like?
Well, it's not commercially viable, but I imagine it would probably be pretty foul.
So it's not going to be the same kind of like sweet honey like we have?
No. I mean, it will be sweeter than the carrion itself, I'm sure, because they...
So are they taking sugar from the meat?
They take the meat itself.
But
I feel like that's maybe not going to be that bad. No. I don't know. If you think about like bacon and honey, I don't know.
Added honey to meat. So, you know.
Maybe it's not that freaky.
Flavor combos are right
there.
I
feel like you're giving I would try it vibes to carry.
Do you know what? I actually would.
Fez?
Yeah, me too, actually. Yeah. Why not?
No, not for you. I think it's the idea of like the dead rotten aspect.
Imagine if we lived in a world with carnivorous bees that could like actually eat your flesh.
I mean, they also make honey out of aphid poo.
Yes.
That's a famous one.
I read
one.
About that.
So aphids will secrete the sugary liquid.
It's called honeydew, is it?
Yes.
Yeah.
And if there's not enough nectar around from flowers, bees will go to the aphid butts and they'll like... that up instead.
This is so disgusting. Yeah,
it's great. But it could be dangerous for the bees, because the plants that the aphids are eating usually release toxins to try and deter the aphids. No. So they might be getting some of the like toxins from that.
Speaking of disgusting and honey, you know the things you serve honey with? They're so unique. They're like
Twizzly job.
The Twizzly job, yeah. They're called honey dippers. Mm. They're like a wooden stick with sort of concentric grooves. Mm. And it's to do with how viscous honey is. If you use a spoon, it all kind of comes off in one glob. And anyway, the other term for honey dippers is, it's a slang term for people who empty toilets. But particularly in the 1920s, when there were like vast swathes of people, they didn't have automated sewage systems, and they would come and collect your sewage and drive it to a part of the world that nobody minded about. And so, yeah, I'm just picturing like housemaids in the 1920s being like, darling, I've got the honey dippers in.
Also, just on the note of it coming off of that honey dipper, there's a tip for anyone that's getting honey out of something. If you put your spoon into some hot water and then get your honey out, it's going to slide straight off.
Wow.
Rather than you having to like get your finger into it. That's, I mean, it's just a
hot spoon.
Yeah, hot spoon.
Cool. I like it.
Honey does seem to be quite unique insofar as if you seal it properly, it can last theoretically forever. Mm. As we mentioned in the intro, archaeologists opened up some, 2,000-3,000 year old honey, and it was still edible.
I love how they kept talking about you could eat it,
really?
But they never admitted to eating it. They wanted to. I think they advised against eating it, obviously. Huh. But I'm 900% sure behind the scenes they were, because like we always say on the show, archaeologists eat the craziest stuff. And they definitely ate that,
I think. You see there was a Kickstarter, I can't remember how long ago, maybe 10, 15 years ago, where some archaeologists had opened up a mummy's tomb and it was like swimming in some brown liquid.
Oh, no.
And there was a Kickstarter, or maybe it was a petition online, where they were like, they got hundreds of thousands of votes to drink the pharaoh juice. Because they thought, it's got to have magical properties. We've seen the mummy.
Would you try that?
I wouldn't try tomb juice, but I would dabble in a bit of the 3,000-year-old honey.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Did you know the pharaoh Pepi II, an ancient Egyptian pharaoh, he used to cover a slave in honey and then make him stand at the other side of the room to attract all the flies. Literally like a honey trap.
Wow. Imagine that being your job, just like the honey board.
And what do you do?
That's really cool. What do you do?
Time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
It is time for our final lunchbox, and today, Jack, that is you.
I brought you guys four different honeys, and we're going to do a blind taste test. Ooh. Three of them are monofloral, and one of them is a blend. So monofloral honey is when you encourage the bees to collect nectar from only one flowering plant. Mm. So you might see acacia honey, which is honey from the acacia flowers. Mm. Obviously, this is quite hard to do, and therefore you can never guarantee that your honey is completely monocultural, but beekeepers will be able to let their bees go to the local trees, so you know what your local trees are. Mm-hmm. And then if you move the hive or have a different hive somewhere else, then they've got different localities, and also the timing of it, so different plants flower at different times. Mm. I did some research. You can get avocado honey.
Ooh.
You see lavender honey. Mm-hmm. You see heather honey, and there's purple honey you can find in North Carolina.
That's fun.
And watermelon honey, basically any plant. Wow. That has flowers you can make honey from.
Love it. When I was in New Zealand, I tasted honey that the bees had been going to a blackcurrant bush.
Okay.
And it tasted like Robina. It was so good.
Anyway, I'm not going to tell you what these ones are. We've got some cheese as well to pair it with. Specifically, I'll talk about it once we reveal the answers, but the cheese specifically goes with one of them. And I've also brought some local wines.
Stunning.
Because that's the other thing that you have a sort of terroir with.
Best
ever. So let's go for it.
Stunning.
Ever.
Okay, should we try honey A?
We shall. It's like classic honey flavour.
Mm.
If you were thinking of honey, that's that.
Yeah.
No. Great, that's that.
Cool. On to the next.
Okay, now we're going to try B.
Ooh.
So that's a different colour as well. That's like way darker.
A bit darker, isn't it?
And it smells like, I think, that smells good.
Oh, wow, you're really going for it with the smelling and the wee gargling.
That tastes to me like Greek honey, like a herby.
That's got a lot more depth of flavour, doesn't it?
It definitely does.
Okay, how about C?
Wow. That tastes almost like boozy.
Mmm.
Doesn't it?
Mmm. I know what you mean. It's got leathery notes.
Like it's got the same...
Almost like a fermenty...
Yeah.
...ness.
Finally, D.
Okay. Oh, come on, D cheese.
Oh.
Oh, it's crystallizey.
Yeah, this one's...
Whoa, I got a big...
I love that texture.
Chunky boy.
Ooh. That wasn't what I was expecting.
Mmm.
Ah. Oh, I don't like that.
Yeah, I don't know if I like that.
That's really bitter.
It's like...
D is bitter, yeah.
It's almost savoury.
So which one do you think is the cheap blend of polyfloral honey?
Mm. I think that must be number A.
Number A. Okay, the reveal. A, the first one you tried, is indeed the supermarket own brand.
Got it.
Yeah, if you go back to it, you'll notice that a sort of lack of depth of flavour.
Mm-hmm.
So B, the one you said was Greek, is Scottish heather honey.
Oh, what?
Nice.
Yeah.
Couldn't be further from Greece.
Which is quite unique around the world. I mean, it's unique to Scotland and Ireland. Mm. And there aren't many other places in the world that can make it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very highly sought after in America. So
ooh.
If you, well, by honey enthusiasts, yeah. Because they can't make it themselves. And then C, the one you said is boozy and is a kind of looks like dulce de leche. That's the Zambian forest honey.
Okay.
So good.
Yeah. And so that leaves the arbutus honey as the final one, the weird tasting bitter honey. Known in Sardinia as Corbezzolo. Corbezzolo honey. And that's Corbezzolo is the name of the tree. Mm-hmm. It's native to the Mediterranean and it's reached as far as Ireland. And I think I've seen one in London, but it's basically known as a strawberry tree because its fruits look like strawberries, even though it's unrelated. Its Latin name is Arbutus unedo. That's because Pliny the Elder called it unedo, which is una edo, meaning only one, because it was such a bitter fruit that he only wanted to, he was like, only one. And Cicero discusses it. When he's referring to Sardinia in a court case, he's like trashing the Sardinians and he's like, even the honey's bitter.
He's not wrong.
So it's got a long history. It flowers in autumn after all other flowers have basically died off, and often the bees can't really be bothered to go out because it's so cold and wet. So it's quite rare and almost impossible to find outside of Sardinia. But they do make it in three other places in the world, Corsica, Greece, and southern Portugal. And luckily, the southern Portuguese export market is much more present. So I was able to find a jar of Portuguese strawberry tree honey, and it's famed for its bitter undertones. But I did want to find the Sardinian one. You can find it online, but you have to import it from Italy. So to import one jar would have cost me £35.
Wow.
And the budget doesn't stretch. No. So I've got Portuguese wine and Sardinian cheese.
Lovely.
And supposedly they go really well with arbutus honey.
I really want to try it with the cheese because I was just thinking, and Jodie, you could probably help with this. What would you do with this? Like, when do you want this much bitterness and sweetness at the same time? And it's a really distinct flavour.
I mean, some people just don't like bitter. Like, it's probably one of the most sort of divisive kind of flavour profiles or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I think, I mean, if it was me, I'd be putting it with something either very salty or like unsavoury or something sweet. So I was thinking maybe it would be good on like ice cream, where that kind of like such a sweetness and the creamy fattiness could like balance out that bitterness that you get from it. And I think texturally that would be quite nice.
Cuba, until recently, was the only country in the world that could guarantee purely organic honey.
Hmm.
Because obviously you don't know where your bees are going to collect the nectar. Mm. And Cuba is a big enough country that bees can't cross the sea to go and forage in Jamaica, let's say. And Cuba was the only country in the world that didn't have pesticides. Because, I mean, it's quite a sad reason. It was reliant on the Soviet Union. So when that collapsed in the early 90s, it couldn't afford to buy pesticides. Mm. So basically, it's a champion of organic food.
Is it still organic?
Well, they've had better economic times. They're probably able to afford pesticide now. But the US embargo is still in place. But I love the concept of monofloral honey. The trouble is, a lot of honey isn't what it says it is. So honey should be expensive because of the labour that goes in. So when you see honey that's like less than a pound for a jar, warning signs should start to appear.
Yes.
The UK is a hotbed of honey fraud. Manufacturers cut honey with cheaper sugary syrups and dye it sometimes to make it brown and dilute their honey. And one of the ways you can tell is if you hold up your honey, you have to have opened it and have a small bit of air at the top, but you can see bubbles forming.
Mm-hmm.
Real honey contains enzymes which create hydrogen peroxide in very small amounts, don't worry, and oxygen. So they're basically making gases, so you can tell. So if your honey doesn't do that, I'm afraid you're
it ain't honey.
Paying for sugary syrup.
Does it mean if there's more bubbles, it's actually more honey?
Yes.
Good.
Because, I mean, honey could be adulterated. It could be 10% glucose syrup, and then you'd undercut your competitors anyway. And then you start selling more because it's cheaper. But, it can be up to 90% glucose syrup.
Madness.
Wow.
So when I was listening to this podcast, which is an amazing piece of journalism by The Observer, it's called The Great British Honey Scandal. Basically, there's a strong body of evidence that suggests that the UK is getting shafted because it does test its honey, but the main adulterator of honey is China. And, you know, it's not fraudulent necessarily, but it is if you say it's 100% honey.
Wait, so is it China, is they're the ones who are producing the honey and they're the ones that are cutting it?
Yes.
As they export it.
Yeah, so at the moment the UK legislation is that if you look on the label you don't have the country of origin. Mm-hmm. It'll probably just say from a range of countries or from non-EU sources. Mm-hmm. And that probably means it's from China because we're the biggest importer of Chinese honey. Mm-hmm. Britain is the sick man of Europe in terms of honey fraud. I don't know, I don't mean to get political, but I probably blame it on Brexit because the EU is much more stringent about it. And actually, the EU, Europeans generally have a much more sense of pride about their own produce. And in fact, Italy is the one place that I managed to find which has Honey Sommelier Academy.
Oh, that sounds amazing. I'd love to go there.
So that is it for this week's edition of Lunchbox Envy. You can follow our socials for foodie facts and podcast updates. We are on X, Facebook, Instagram and TikTok at Lunchbox Envy Pod.
Yes, and you can also get in touch and send us your facts, recipes, questions by emailing us lunchbox@qi.com.
Jodie, is there anywhere we can find new recipes, new food inspiration from you?
So if you head over to Substack, I have a free newsletter called The New British Table. And basically, I just focus on seasonal veg-forward cookery with a little hint of nostalgia and the yesteryear in there as well. So.
Sounds wonderful. Nice. Yeah, check that out.
Sweet. Well, we'll leave you with this. In 2012, Alsatian beekeepers, as in people from Alsace, not
yeah, not the dogs. Yeah.
were alarmed when their honey was coming out green and blue. It turns out that the bees had been visiting a local M&M's factory and feeding off the dyed sugary residue. Aww. M&M's quickly started keeping their dyed waste indoors.
Amazing.
We'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Lunchbox Envy was hosted by Jack Chambers, Jodie Nixon, and me, Manu Onryu. It was produced by Alex Bell. This has been a quite interesting podcast.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.